This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action today. This hour we'll be joined by Jamie Metzl. He's in studio already. If you're smart enough to get Fox Nation, there's a lot of moving parts. It's Veterans Day. Thanks to all those who served. And guess what? The vice president and president will be back together today. First time really since the election result. Obviously, on Wednesday, the current president will meet the president-elect, President Trump, on Wednesday, and he'll take a tour of the Oval Office, at which time one of the topics is staying in Ukraine and finishing out the fight. And I'm actually with Biden on that. So before we get to Jamie, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
I'm convinced that President Trump knows that World War III is in the future, as you just described it, and that we have got to take action to restore deterrence in dealing with our adversaries.
General Jack Keane, as good as it gets, world responds to the incoming Trump team and his agenda, as Trump is already moving with Israel and Ukraine and with allies in Europe. I'll explain.
Number two.
In the same plan he had during the first administration, you concentrate on the public safety threats and the national security threats first, because they're the worst of the worst. So it's going to be the worst first. That's how it has to be done.
Staffing up, the nominations are rolling in from the Trump camp to Mar-a-Lago as drama builds among the three contenders to be Senate Majority Leader.
Number one.
The first big error was the Biden administration's blindness to the collapse of the immigration system and the chaos at the border. Instead of shutting it down, liberals branded anyone protesting as heartless and racist.
That is Fareed Zakaria weighing in on CNN. Yes, the aftermath of the Titanic historic American election. We look at the stats, the Republicans' agenda, and the massive dramatic Democratic finger-pointing and blame gaming. With me right now is Jamie Metzl, former member of the WHO Advisory Committee, former National Security Council official of the Clinton administration, and author of the book Super Convergence, How the Genetics, Biotech, and AI Revolution Will Transform Our Lives, Work, and World. That is a huge, that'll be enough. I'd retire after writing that book. But it's excellent, Jamie, and the premise is just shows you how wide your swath is. But you have personal connections. You're a Democrat, and you also know Joe Biden well.
Joe Biden's my former boss. I love the guy. I respect him. I was deputy staff director of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when Joe Biden was chairman and Tony Blinken was staff director. And I appreciate many of the things that he did as president, but he made a catastrophic error 1 year ago by not just saying, I've played my role. It's time to step aside. I won't seek the reelection. Let's have an open primary and let somebody else emerge. And we all saw on June 27th in the debate that he just was not in any kind of condition to serve four more years. And I really think that that hampered us.
So that was one thing, too, is also the fact is whether he liked it or not, whether he feels like he accomplished a lot, still only 28% of the country, even if he was 56 instead of 82. Thinks he's heading in the right only 28% of the country think we're heading in the right direction. So when Kamala Harris comes back and says, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yep.
So that kind of – what were you thinking when that emerged from the view?
It was terrible. I mean, I just think that everybody looking at what was happening, looking at where the American electorate was, recognized that this was going to be a change election. And we had the former president and the current vice president. And so that's a tough pick for a change election. The Democrats had the opportunity to have a change candidate. And if we had had some kind of open primary, even – after the debate, even in a short version, we could have had a competition of ideas, which is what democracy is about. And somebody could have said, hey, you know, somebody could have emerged as a partial critique of the Biden administration. But when you're the sitting vice president and your political career is dependent on being anointed by Joe Biden, I think that was really difficult. And then she couldn't answer that just really essential question.
So Senator Joe Manchin, who I have an infinite amount of respect for, yeah. and makes you earn his vote, and that yeah. drove Democrats crazy, he joined me on Saturday night. Cut nine.
Basically, the Democratic Party, the party that I was born and raised in, being fiscally responsible and socially compassionate, and always there to help the working person who had a job, wanted to keep that job, wanted to have a safe working condition, wanted to make it had good pay with benefits, they could take care of their family and have a quality life. They forgot them, and what the party over the years has just moved from there, spending more time and effort on helping those who are able-bodied but won't work or don't work.
And that was a lot of the social spending.
Yep.
You know, we're going to give more. We're going to forgive student loans, you know, and we're going to do it anyway, even if the Congress says you can't do that. And a lot of working class people go, really? I chose not to go to college.
Yep.
And I'm paying a portion of my bill for that? It makes yep. no sense. The way you attack it, obviously, would have been college is too expensive. We got to work on making these people, like these universities, accountable. $80,000 is not possible for a middle class family. That yep. And yep. also, I would have cut the interest rate. Cut the interest rate on the loans to come back so you don't break the obligation in the free market
yeah, well,
system.
Interest rates, I mean, as you know, we have a Federal Reserve, and so interest rates have been wisely.
No, through the student loan.
Okay.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Because it's federal.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So that there's all these kinds of things that we could and should have done. I agree with a lot of what Senator Manchin said in that clip. But rather than positioning, and I'm a Democrat because I believe all in all, the Democrats are more focused on helping the people who need the most help, although I know there are different views and I respect those. But the Democrats got branded by people believing that we supported not helping the poorest people get into college, but these crazy left-wing lunatics burning American flags, wearing Hamas headbands on America. We should have been.
Can you believe that?
We should have just been condemning those people rather than saying, "Hey, the person who was yelling end genocide with Kamala Harris," and she said, "Let him speak. He's got a point." What she should have done is use that as, like, with Joe Biden, with the Sister Sulia moment, and said, "Like, hey,
soldier moment shut, with Bill Clinton."
Right? Yeah, just like shut the F up. Every American believes our hearts ache for the innocent civilians in Israel, in Palestine, everywhere. But we're not going to align ourselves with Hamas. We don't want to globalize the Intifada. We demand that our hostages and all hostages be released immediately. It wasn't that hard, but I think that this kind of feel-good, vibey election, it's like, oh, let everybody into the tent and I'm going to, you know, say things on both sides of the spectrum. Part of defining who you are requires defining who you're not. And I think Kamala Harris didn't do a great job of that.
So I want to give you an idea. Let's just look at the blue states, for example. In 2020, New York went to Joe Biden by 23. It went to Harris by 12.
Yep.
In California, it went to Joe Biden by 29. It went to Kamala Harris by 18. In New Jersey, 16 to 5.
Wow.
In Massachusetts, from 33 to 24. In Maryland, 33 to 24. Illinois, 17 to 9. You know what he did? Philadelphia, Chicago, New York City, Manhattan. They went into those strongholds, Democratic strongholds. And know what he's got to continue to do for the country,
yeah.
not even for Republican? Go back.
Yeah.
Don't
oh,
just
sure.
win and try to win them over again. Go back to that barbershop.
Yeah.
What do you need in the Bronx?
Yeah.
Because in the Bronx went, you know, much more towards Trump. What do you need here? And I think we have to. Do you think, Jamie, I'm dreaming and thinking we could go, hey, what is the working class? What is the middle class? Instead of what are the blacks? What are Hispanics? What are Asians?
Well,
what are women?
Yeah.
What are working class? I'm like, we makes us divided to begin with. Like,
yeah.
I'm black and I should be this. I'm white
right.
and I should be that.
I hate identity politics. We are all Americans. And what we should say is, how do we come together as Americans? And again, I'm a Democrat for reasons that are strongly held. But when we say that every black person is being oppressed and they need to fight the oppressor, it's like we're dividing people. And those numbers that you've just said, the Latin vote swung heavily in favor of Trump. Black men swung heavily relative to the last elections in favor of Trump. They are saying we don't want to be part of this leftist woke BS, and we need to listen to them. And that's why I wrote a piece that you mentioned in our interview this morning.
This is what struck me. You also call out the 1619 Project.
Oh, my God. It's such BS. I mean, it's ridiculous. This I mean, we're here. I think I tweeted this morning. Most Americans are patriotic Americans who love this country, want to build this country, who recognize that we have some really challenging, terrible things in our past. Slavery, how the Native Americans were treated. But this 1619 project, to say that the entire history of America is based on slavery, and that's nothing else. I mean, like, we had a whole civil war where you've written books about it, Brian, where we fought against, for all sorts of things, but fighting against the institution of slavery. And so to just push this fake history, incomplete history on everybody else, it's no wonder people are saying, hey, this isn't who we are.
Absolutely.
Americans are really decent people. We're centrist people. We are not – this is not some kind of thing where the police are just hunting down minorities. We've worked so hard to integrate our police. It's not perfect. Can we do better? Absolutely, yes. But I think the Democrats were catering to far-left lunatics, and because we couldn't say, hey, we don't support this BS, the Republicans had just the easiest job in the world of branding all of the Democrats with these far-left lunatics.
You know, it's interesting. 60 Minutes did what we do all the time. We always go to diners, and, you know, we always go to now the barbershops and the new thing. And 60 Minutes, after the election result that you wrote about, they said, let's go to diners and let's go to barbershops. And they went. And they got the same answers we got, but they were shocked by it. Yeah. And the other part of it, and I know you find this hard to believe, and that's okay. A lot of people do. A lot of them just see eye to eye with Trump and think he's working for them. And they were working class. And they just said, we got his back because he has our back. So whatever you want to say, it's not rhetoric. It's not the host of The Apprentice. That's 2016, you could say.
Yeah.
The host of The Apprentice can message and market.
Yeah.
But now they're saying the former president, we want to be the next president by what he did. So you could go put down working class people. Where has it got you last time?
Yeah.
So we'll see. Jamie Metzl, a few more minutes when we come back, because there's an excerpt that I want you to expand on, and this is it. You write in your column, people talk about the middle of the road as though it was unacceptable. President Eisenhower said in 1963, the middle of the road is all about the usable all of the usable surface. The extreme right and left are in the gutters. Most Americans are extremists, but sensible centrists.
Are not extremists.
But sensible centrists. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So we said 65% want something different. We are just not going to give in to them. But maybe the odiousness of Trump combined with the Dobbs decision, we can overcome it. Well, we didn't overcome it. But when we go back and history unearths this, it's going to be right there on the View. And I think her name was Sunny Houston or whatever. Asked the question. And that's the most devastating answer you could imagine.
From President Biden, and she had, I don't see many differences. Jamie Metzl, our guest, longtime Democrat who wants to see his party get back on track.
Yeah.
Let's take a step back. You have such international knowledge. I'm looking at all these reports about China's economy.
Yeah.
And I see this Cornell law professor who used to, focuses on trade. He says, the balance is actually power is actually with the U.S. right now. They have a vulnerable economy. How do we take advantage of it?
Yeah, China's vulnerable, and we're also vulnerable. We've become so reliant on China that if we just do across the board, whatever, 100% tariffs, we're going to harm ourselves. So we need to be strategic, but we need to recognize that whatever the official language, China is an adversary of the United States. They are building a military designed to defeat ours. They're being unbelievably aggressive in Taiwan, in the South China Sea, around the world. They're supporting Russia in Ukraine. So we need to be really, really tough. And there is a bipartisan consensus that we had the House Special Committee on China, Krishnamurti, and Gallagher, who were saying, hey, here's a really aggressive China strategy. We need to be smart and strategic, but now is a time to really be tough with China. I hope President Trump can do it in a smart and strategic way.
He says that they look forward to a less than adversarial relationship with President Xi. So we'll see what happens. I think that President Trump, at the very least, if he's like, well, we want to get involved, when he was explained to him the 85% of the world's chips, America's chips, come right from Taiwan, and that do you want China would absolutely have leverage over us if they take Taiwan.
Yep.
The CHIPS Act could only do so much, and it's been very slow to bring chips back.
Right.
A lot has to do with the DEI requirements from the companies that take the money.
Well, maybe it's a little bit of that, but also it's our immigration system, because we need a lot of specialized workers, and a lot of those workers could come from Taiwan, and so they're having a harder time getting here. But it's also a broader point about China, about Taiwan, is it's not just making chips. It's a whole ecosystem that allows them and hopefully us to do it. So we need to friendshore. Like, there are things that we can and should do here at home. And we need to recognize that there's like a friend sphere of America and the countries that are in our
deals. Yeah,
I think it's just like if you're in our enemy's side or adversary, if you're in Greater China, that we should make it a lot tougher. And if the United States wants to compete with China and to reduce our reliance on China, as we should, we need to recognize that certainly here in North America, U.S., Canada, and Mexico were kind of one thing. It's an unbeatable combination: Canada's natural resources, American ingenuity, and Mexican low-cost labor and high-energy labor. We need to harness that as an ecosystem, just like China has harnessed their ecosystem. So if we are tougher on China, as I believe we should be, we really need to find ways to work more closely with Canada and Mexico.
But, I mean, dude, you don't want to say this is a negotiating tool when you negotiate.
Yeah.
But clearly, people were doing the math on what he was saying about tariffs. But knowing Trump, he's negotiating. Yeah, I'm never going to sell you that car. Sorry.
Right.
You're never going to get that house. Okay, that makes you want it more.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to put huge tariffs on you if you don't come across and redo this trade deal. One thing that burns the president, he believes that the European Union's got too good a deal against us when it comes to trade.
Yeah.
So he's going to say, I'm walking away. I'm going to put huge tariffs on. He's not jeopardizing. He's dealing with friends.
I hope so. And my feeling is, as Democrats, after President Trump won this election so handily with a mandate, if we Democrats had received this level of vote, we would have said the American people have spoken. We have a mandate. And so what we need to say, we're not going to judge President Trump by whatever concerns we have in the past, although we may have concerns. Let's open a new phase. Let's see what happens. Are there opportunities to work collaboratively and together? President Trump is a non-traditional politician. And that, as you mentioned, it can be a strength, and let's see what happens. But I think that the Democrats have to be supporting President Trump when he does good things, which I have done now and in the past. And if there are things that happen, we have questions, right, and you and I are aligned on Ukraine, where there are a lot of concerns about what's going to happen.
Israel.
We need to speak up. And Israel, yeah. So, I think Trump – a point on that is – I feel President Trump has been pretty consistent in his support of Israel. And some people are saying, well, you know, what did he say to Muslim populations in Michigan or whatever? But I think President Trump has been pretty strong on Israel. And with the appointment of Elise Stefanik, I think makes that point pretty clearly. But Israel exists within the context of America's global position. And so if we are seen as compromising, equivocating in Europe and giving Putin a win, Israel is at risk.
So is Taiwan.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jamie Metzl, thanks so much. We agree. When I was bringing up the chips, that's what the president sees. He sees money and security.
Yep.
Jamie Metzl, thanks so much. Pick up his book, Super Convergence, How the Genetics, Biotech, and AI Revolution Will Transform Our Lives, Work, and World. It's fantastic. Jamie, thanks so much.
My great pleasure, Brian. Right. Anytime.
1-866-408-7669. Your call, please.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The only sanctuary that sanctuary city jurisdictions provide are to those illegal aliens. They are not protecting those communities that they're serving. And so I think it's important to continue to remind the American people, governors, mayors, and other elected officials that ICE is there to help you. It's there to protect those American communities and to remove those dangerous criminal aliens. But look, if they're not going to be a partner, I would say that ICE has the authority, the jurisdiction, the ability to go in there. It's always better to have that partnership with state and locals. But they have a job to do at the end of the day, and I'm confident they will do that under President Trump.
So that is Chad Wolf, who might be the next HHS secretary. He was DHS, Department of Homeland Security. He did a good job. And Tom Homan, I think, likes him. Tom Homan's been named border czar. Why is that important? He doesn't have to go through the circus with AOC and others about being confirmed. Number two, he goes, I don't want to do the other stuff. I want the northern border, the southern border. I want to hand the ports, and that's it. And Tom Homan got the name, and he's in. He can start acting already. He's got to bulk up the ranks of the of ICE officers, and I've got a pretty good source that says some sheriffs in sanctuary cities are going to work with him anyway. You know what they say in sanctuary cities? If an ICE person comes out and goes, I think you have MS-13 in cell number 6, they'll say, no comment. In fact, you can't even stay here and export them. Instead of getting them out and getting them away from the prison population and getting them back to their own countries or into a max, supermax prison, they say you can't cooperate. Now, in 2016, they sued. Do you really want to be part of a city like Philadelphia, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, that is a sanctuary city and California's situation, a sanctuary state? You really think, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, you really think that that's keeping your family safe? Can't get rid of, have ICE get find out who the criminals are? So Tom Homan's going to be great. He is officially in. Had a chance to talk to him last night, and he was on Fox and Friends this morning. President's got 4,000 seats to fill. 1,200 he will do directly. So Elise Stefanik is going to be UN ambassador. Awesome. Remember how good Nikki Haley was. She is so tough. That's going to be a position with teeth. It's going to give the UN new attention. So the president officially announced that. There's going to be no Glenn Youngkin. He says, I'm not going to do it. No Senator Cotton. I have a job. He's probably going to be the number three in the Senate. Pompeo is out and Haley's out. They put that on Truth Social, put a very nice Truth Social ad. They did a great job, but they're not going to be part of this administration. We'll see. I thought that was unnecessary, but we'll see. I also look for Vivek Ramaswamy to get an offer. I think RFK Jr. is going to get an offer. I think Tulsi Gabbard's going to get an offer. As Secretary of Defense, I'd love to see, from what I understand, Mike Waltz would be the best pick. Mike Waltz, however, is in the House. And so far, they're about to get the majority in the House. They got 215. They need 218. They got about 24 seats are still up. Now, if there's only a 10-seat majority, you lose Elise Stefanik because she's going to be going through the confirmation process. Then they got 90 days to do an election. It's going to go to a Republican, I'm sure, unless they pick the wrong Republican. But I'm sure it's Elise Stefanik won by about 10 points, so that should be it. I wonder if that's going to affect whether Mike Waltz or Mark Green becomes HHS or Homeland Security Secretary, Department of Homeland Security, DHS Secretary. I'm not sure. I think it'll be important to get a good Secretary of Defense. As Secretary of State, I hope it's Marco Rubio. What do you think? 1-866-408-7669. Bill Hagerty, smart as heck, a real loyalist to Trump. He was ambassador to Japan, very successful businessman. I didn't love this answer. Cut three.
I'll just say this. I was privileged to have a tremendous career in business, but one of the greatest honors in my life was to represent the United States, the greatest country in the world, in President Trump's administration overseas. Mm-hmm. It's also been one of the greatest honors of my life to represent the people of Tennessee serving the United States Senate. And whatever role I hold going forward, it's going to be advancing the positions that President Trump has articulated that the American people overwhelmingly supported. And I'll do that in whatever role necessary. But we are going to see America strong again.
When they asked him about Ukraine, he said, we got to build up our border. But if you're Secretary of State, that's not your priority. If you're Secretary of Defense, rather. So if that's going to be your priority, or Secretary of State, either one, I think it's a mixed message. That's a very senatorial answer. But as Secretary of State, you got a conflict that was not started by our ally. It was started by our enemy, who is now using 10,000, if not 12,000, North Korean troops in Russian uniforms to try to attack the Ukrainians. You can't just walk away from that and expect China not to pick up on it. That's insane. You can't walk away from that and expect that the other NATO nations not going to say, okay, we're alone now. Now, they're not in NATO, but their NATO might as well be. Now, if you want to get to talks, I love the fact that President Trump picked up the phone, talked to Vladimir Putin, or Vladimir Putin called him. I didn't know which. Maybe it's important for me to find out, so I'll do that. And he said, don't escalate the war. Don't escalate the war in Ukraine. Trying to figure this thing out. He talked to Zelensky right away, and they talked before. He talked three times already to Netanyahu. I think that's fantastic. Now, I know Biden, normally they'd be upset saying only one president at a time. Technically, they're right. But Biden couldn't even walk on the beach yesterday. He's got a vice president drinking wine, hanging out with her grandchildren or her nieces and nephews. They're totally disengaged. They're basically ready to throw up their hands. So I had no problem, and I don't think they have a problem with Trump saying, I need to get in there. I want this thing done to Netanyahu before I get in. And Netanyahu goes, fine with me. But let me tell you what I got to do. I got to get rid of the Hezbollah's long-range capabilities, number one. Number two is I got to make sure that these tunnels are destroyed and Hamas can't exist and a Palestinian Authority stands up that are not affiliated with terrorists and not affiliated with Iran. That, to me, is fair enough. And then if Iran hits, it's over because they can't defend themselves. Now, are they going to wait? Is Iran going to wait for Trump to take over? If they're going to do something, I think they're going to do it now. Because when Trump takes over, all bets are off. But the way it seems, it looks like Trump's barely almost taken over already. So here is Douglas Murray on Israel, Iran, and America's role. Remember, he's been in all these war zones, is a rock star in Israel and Ukraine, and was just with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago, Cut 43. He was with me on One Nation.
He will, I would hope, return to the policies he had before, absolutely strangle the regime there, allow the Israelis to do what they need to do to take out the nuclear reactors, take out the oil fields, whatever they need to do for their own security. America doesn't need to be involved, but remember, Biden and co. spent the last year focused on regime change. Where do they focus on regime change? Not in Iran, in Jerusalem.
So that's important, isn't it? That's where he's focused on, putting pressure on Netanyahu, putting pressure on the Israeli people to get rid of the prime minister. Instead, he survives. Now he's turning his popularity around as he wipes out Nasrallah and kills Sinwar within weeks of each other. And now they are about to kick Hamas out of Qatar. So things are working Netanyahu's direction, but we got to get those hostages out, and some of which are 7 or 8 are Americans. So that's got to be a priority. I think just the presence of knowing what's coming is working to his advantage. General Jack Keane, Cut 40. The world has changed since Trump was in.
It's not isolated that Putin moved into Ukraine. It's not isolated that Iran operationalized all its proxies to destroy the state of Israel and drive the United States military out of the Middle East. And President Xi stepped up his game the last 3.5 years, intimidating and coercing Taiwan and the Philippines and our other allies in the region. This is all collectively happening because they believe they're going to be able to get away with it. And that's why this election has been a seminal event. And I'm convinced that President Trump knows that World War III is in the future, as you just described it, and that we have got to take action to restore deterrence in dealing with our adversaries.
Yeah, and General Jack Keane will be an advisor to Trump. I know they really like each other, but Trump will tell him that Jack Keane will tell him the truth. And that's just it. He's not going to condemn him, say you're not worthy, like General Mattis said. And General Kelly felt the same way. And Rex Tillerson felt the same way. It matters. It matters if someone's telling you, listen, I've been here. I've fought in these wars. I've been fighting since Vietnam. I was an enlisted guy, rose to a 4-star general by being effective, not by being political. Let me just tell you, my track record's pretty strong. And so is my track record with you, Mr. President. So when I tell you that leaving Ukraine is going to haunt you the rest of your 4 years, I'm not kidding. Just like I told you, that if you leave Afghanistan, it's going to fall. When you left the White House, it fell without you. And if you had done some of the things that you spoke about in some brainstorming situations, it would have failed under your watch. But Joe Biden, with all his experience, blew the whole thing. And I just hope that that lesson, how quickly things change, the momentum that he has right now can be lost with something like that. It can be lost with things out of your control. For example, Katrina. Katrina, we can go over that forever. You don't want to hear about it. But Trump, George Bush was able to win re-election. The Republicans were in charge another 4 years, so they were able to finish the job in both the wars. And he was in Crawford. Katrina hit. Karl Rove was away. Nobody there acted quick enough, and they thought the governor and mayor was able to control it. They weren't. Katrina being this catastrophe, so many people died, and it looked like the president was slow to react. So the same thing could happen here, but don't do it self-inflicted. There's natural disasters, and there's Trump and Bush and Clinton and Obama caused disasters. So that would be one thing. Just to pick out Ukraine and say, Vladimir Putin, go ahead, would be to ignore what he's doing elsewhere in the world, even trying to get influence over in Venezuela. So when we come back, I'll be able to take some of your calls. Or if you want to write me, BrianKilmeade.com, just click on contacts. Here's from Dave. Dave writes me this. What's the number one quality required to head these national security agencies? I'll tell you. As a former inspector general for the Naval Reserve, I found that many, if not all, individuals in leadership roles of government and media agencies had sacrificed personal integrity, credibility, and respect to get ahead. It seems to me that the more senior positions, the individuals were more interested in personal gain and advancement than the quality of their performance. It was so prevalent, there's no concern of being reported, needless to say. I would appreciate that. He went on to say, look, when you go out there and you you put your name up there, I just hope it's not to be run for president in 2028. And that's one thing I heard, is that the president is really wary of people that want to succeed him. He's not jealous of them, but he wants people that are acting for now, not for later. And I get it. Brian Kilmeade Show.
On this Veterans Day, take a minute and thank them.
Thank you for your service.
Happy Veterans Day from the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, on Tuesday, we learned that Democrats actually don't know how to rig an election. Donald Trump swept all the swing states, won the popular vote, and Republicans took back control of the Senate. Don't you guys worry. If I know Democrats, they're going to take a long look in the mirror, learn from their mistakes, and then run Biden again in 2020.
And how did I let y'all convince me that rural Pennsylvania would pick the Jamaican Indian lady? Clearly, I've been spending too much time with you white liberals and your goofy optimism.
So that was a little of the weekend update. They also did a cold open. It was kind of interesting as they pretend to kiss up to Trump. And like, hey, you don't mind it. And they act like they, you know what, we'll play some of it a little bit later. Bill Burr was the host. And usually I go past the opening monologue. But when it's a stand-up comic, I always wait, especially with Bill Burr. And at the beginning, he started generically, and then he got into it a little. Now, look, this is not the most politically correct joke you'll ever hear, but, man, is it funny. Cut 44.
All right, let's get to what you all want to talk about. All right, ladies, you're 0-2 against this guy. 0-2. All right, but you learn more from your losses than your wins. So let's get into the game tape. All right, ladies, enough with the pantsuit. Okay, it's not working. Stop trying to have respect for yourselves. You don't win the office like on policy, you know? You got to whore it up a little. I'm not saying go full Hooters, but find the happy medium between Applebee's and your dad didn't stick around.
I mean, that's on SNL. We might want to bleep out the up a little in retrospect. But that was on SNL over the weekend. And he was just having fun with the fact that you had two pantsuits running, women who prefer pantsuits. All I could tell you is, out of all the excuses, you might be able to go with all of it. Well, she only had 107 days, or she only had 107 days. He waited too long, or he got out just in time. You can go back and forth on that. The one thing I will not accept is that she not get elected because she's a woman and she's a minority. And I'm telling you, Nikki Haley would have won. Would have beat Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, too. Not like Trump did, but she would have won. Nothing to do with women minority. Don't say America is sexist and racist because your person didn't win. Because Joe Biden was losing by even more than her, which is why they put her in. And my theory was 100% correct. Nancy Pelosi and her hour-long spin fest, which is should be embarrassed to give an interview to New York Times and not be honest. It's not the day before the election. It's after the election. This is the time to come out and say my message was bad and our party is unmoored and I'm going to retire. I'm 110 years old. But instead, she came out and said, we can win the House. Go win the House. And Joe Biden stayed in too long. Yeah, well, yeah. But when we've done better with an open process. But when Joe endorsed Kamala, we really had no choice. We went with her. She would have, but she ran a perfect campaign. None of that is true. But it's true that Joe Biden said, you're going to force me out, aren't you? Even after the assassination and things calmed down and things started setting and the numbers started coming back, you're going to force me out, aren't you? Even though I was on camera saying, God Almighty, because the only one who could force me out, and I guess Nancy Pelosi, and they say, yeah, well, I'm picking her. So one tweet says I'm out, and the second tweet says I'm putting all my delegates and all my money and all my power behind Kamala Harris. So putting all the pressure on the Democratic Party, that party of unity and diversity, to say, guess we're not going to be able to have a open primary leading up to the election. But here's the problem. Unless the winner was willing to say that Joe Biden, foreign policy was an epic fail, that what the border had been broken from day one, and Mayorkas was not telling the truth to the American people, and I will. Unless they're going to come out and say the new Green Deal, the rescue plan, and infrastructure, which was too DEI-infused and politically correct-dominated and was way too much spending with money we didn't have that led to massive inflation beyond the pandemic and it was not transitory and you knew it the whole time, you were going to lose because it was the track record that no one was willing to walk away from because they kept telling us it was so perfect. And on the Mike Pompeo situation, I thought two things were going to happen. It's going to be very exciting to see honesty from Democrats as they tear each other's eyes out, blame each other, and then emerge with a party that may be pro-American for a change. But the other thing is Mike Pompeo and the staffing of the Trump campaign. Mike Pompeo not being in is a disaster. I think he would have been perfect for just about anything, CIA, defense, Secretary of State again. But one of the reasons he's not in, they say he's too hawkish. And Don Jr. didn't want him. And the so extreme MAGA group. I don't like to talk like that, but just to put the very right-wing MAGA group.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country and around the world, where today is Veterans Day. Salute to all that have served, past and present. And also, let me bring this up. At Columbia University, it looks like in Columbia there's going to be an anti-American day against our veterans. They say it's part of the warmongering machine. If anybody's sending their kids to Columbia, I don't know why you would do it. I mean, there's got to be a better institution they could be proud of because that on your resume used to be a glide path to success. And I think it's just going to be just the opposite. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Senator Joni Ernst, and Michael Goodwin is standing by. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I'm convinced that President Trump knows that World War III is in the future, as you just described it, and that we have got to take action to restore deterrence in dealing with our adversaries.
That would help world response to the incoming Trump team and his agenda, as Trump is already moving with Israel and with Ukraine and with Germany today. We'll explain.
Number two.
In the same plan you had during the first administration, you concentrate on the public safety threats and the national security threats first, because they're the worst of the worst. So it's going to be the worst first. That's how it has to be done.
Yep. As Tom Homan gets the job as borders are, only it's a job he wants, staffing up. The nominations are rolling in from the Trump camp in Mar-a-Lago as drama builds among the three contenders to be the next Senate Majority Leader.
Number one.
The first big error was the Biden administration's blindness to the collapse of the immigration system and the chaos at the border. Instead of shutting it down, liberals branded anyone protesting as heartless and racist.
And that didn't work, because we're not heartless and racist. We just care about the country. The aftermath of the titanic historic American victory, election victory for Republicans. We look at the stats, the Republicans' agenda, and the massive Democratic finger-pointing and blame-gaming. And some of these numbers are just absolutely astounding. When you talk about the popular vote, Trump has now passed the all-time record for sitting presidents for votes, 74,650,000, with 312 electoral votes, bigger than the highest in 36 years. And by the way, he is about 5 million ahead of Kamala Harris. We still got to count California. But you can't look anywhere and not see gains. For example, in blue states, you have a substantial victory. In blue states, you have in 2024 and 2020. So in 2020, you had New York by 23 from Biden. He lost New York by 12. Joe Biden got 21, California by 29 percentage points. He was within 18 of Harris. In New Jersey, was a 16 distance. Now it's 5. Massachusetts from 33 to 24. Maryland, same thing. Illinois, 17 to 9. Because Trump is making gains inside urban environments. Philadelphia, Chicago, New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Michael Goodwin, you've seen a lot of things change and a lot of titanic elections. What can Americans expect to change when Donald Trump gets prepared and eventually takes office? What will change in America?
Good morning, Brian. Well, look, I think the first thing will be dramatic in the sense of comparing Trump to Biden, just the optics of it. Trump is a hard worker. He moves forward. He's always moving forward. He's just got 1,000 things to do. Biden, very sleepy, of course, embarrassing in these, where you would see pictures of him and a visiting foreign leader in the Oval Office in front of the fireplace and Biden reading from a cue card if he stays awake. That will not be the issue with Donald Trump. He may say some things that make you make you wonder, but nonetheless, it's what he will do that I think will be the clear distinction here.
Yeah, I think for one thing, I think he's going to do, he's already moving on the border. You know, you have, they got to bulk up the ICE ranks. You have Homeland Security Secretary, former Tom Homan, who used to run ICE. He turned down an opportunity, perhaps, that's what I'm hearing, to be Director of Homeland Security because he just wants to focus on the border. Can you imagine that? The last person who tried to focus on the border, she said she didn't want to do it, and that's why she failed as president. Remember this exchange. This is the Tom Homan will be taking over and taking on the left. Cut to.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their
parents. If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
Mr. Homan, with all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum and go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
See, that's what he's dealing with, and that's what they're going to be dealing with. What do you think they're thinking right now?
Well, look, I think they're all just blaming each other. It's quite a thing to watch the Democrats in their circular firing squad trying to figure out how this happened and who to blame. I think what they should be doing instead is listening and watching what's going on. I mean, you played the clip from Fareed Zakaria, who is a deep, deep blue Democrat, but he has common sense about some of these things, and he can see what's working, what's not working. He did something similar. You and I discussed it about the colleges with the anti-Semitism and everything. I mean, so you have people like that, and even in the media, who are seeing that the Democratic Party has failed across the board. And so, Brian, I think the contrasts are going to keep emerging. I'm thinking this morning, Elise Stefanik going to be the UN. Ambassador. She reminds me very much of Jean Kirkpatrick. Jean Kirkpatrick, who was Ronald Reagan's UN ambassador. And it's going to be the same thing, taking on the UN, taking on its anti-Semitism, taking on its, sort of anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism view of the world. That's the kind of contrast that Donald Trump is going to draw, I believe, across the board. I mean, the military, the pronouns will be out. The military, the strength will be in. And I don't think he's looking for war. He's looking for peace through strength, that if you are strong enough, you basically put off the wars because nobody wants to mess with you. And that's the kind of approach I think Donald Trump will be taking. It'll be very aggressive, but it won't be reckless. It won't be warmongering. It will be protecting America, protecting our allies, and pushing freedom to the forefront of the agenda. Freedom at home, free speech, freedom abroad, freedom for our allies to pursue their dreams and their objectives without this drowning and trying to sort of weave your way through all of the obstacles as Biden is trying to placate, you know, Hamas, trying to placate the anti-Semitic students, trying to placate, you know, the Arabs who want to eliminate Israel or curb American presence in the Middle East. I mean, that's what Iran is about. Get America out of the Middle East so we can have a clear shot of Israel. Well, I think that has already been resolved by Israel. Israel now has a clear shot at Iran if it wants to take it. And that, I think, will be a big issue coming up very shortly. What does Iran do about Israel, about America, back strong in the Mideast?
There's a couple of things going on there, because there's been three conversations now between Netanyahu and Trump. Not only are they friendly, they had a brief falling out. Not only are they friendly, but there's got to be something going on, because MBS was his first call and the longest call. And now he's talking to Netanyahu three times. He talked to Putin on Thursday. He's talking to the German chancellor today. I want you to hear one thing before we go. Tom Homan, before we move on to another topic, Tom Homan was on with us today exclusively on Fox and Friends after he was named border czar. And here's what he says priority is. Cut 52.
I want to add one more thing, another priority. This administration has lost over 300,000 yes. children that were smuggled in this country by criminal cartels they can't find. That's another priority. We need to save these children, because some of these children are in forced labor. Some of these children are in sex trafficking. Some of these children are living a life of hell every day. We need to save these children and get them back with their families.
So that's going to be a focus, too. Remember, a handful of kids got separated from their families when their parents crossed the border. That was a national firestorm. No one talks about the 300,000 that we can't find.
Yeah, where is AOC crying, right? Down at the border, as she did when Trump was president. Look, Brian, I think one of the things that's happening here, all of a sudden, it's happening so fast, like a cascade. All of the lies, all of the hypocrisies of the left are being revealed before us, that everything Donald Trump did, he's Hitler, blah, 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 the world will end. Look at it. They don't say it anymore. They know it was a campaign lie, and they just kind of walked away from it. Election denier.
Well, you remember the convicted criminal
doing in Pennsylvania,
the felon.
Right?
They stopped saying that.
Yes. Yes, because they knew it was a lie and it had been revealed. I mean, even Peter Ducey at the White House press briefing talking about it was Jackie Hendrick who raised the question about Biden saying, you know, Trump was a Nazi and going to be the end of the world, threat to democracy. And then the day after Trump wins, he says we're going to be okay. And she raises the question, well, did he believe it when he said Trump was a threat to democracy, and the press secretary walks out of the room? I mean, it was all a lie. It was all a lie. And the sooner the left, the ordinary people on the left realize that, the sooner they can begin to look at Donald Trump through honest eyes and see he is not here to destroy America. He's here to make America, shall we say it, great again. I mean, as he once said, what's wrong with making America great?
Nothing. So Joe Biden's going to meet with President Trump on Wednesday, at which time he's going to advocate for Ukraine. I think the president's talked to Zelensky, too. I could not believe it. It looks like Vladimir Putin's losing 1,200 a day in October. 1,200 a day. Can you imagine this? In this month, I mean, I cannot believe. Do they have parents who know how stupid this war is? The invasion that wasn't necessary because if somebody thought in 3 BC Ukraine was part of Russia? So there could be a looking for an off ramp on both sides, I think. But Vladimir Putin is not of right mind. We're going to see where this goes.
Well, and you talk to anybody who knows history, Brian. I mean, that is the Russian experience. I mean, that's the way they fight. You know, they don't worry about their own casualties, and it's another sign that this is what you have when you don't have a democracy.
You mentioned Fareed Zakaria before. Here's a little of he said he so it went for 7 minutes. What's wrong with his party? Cut seven.
The second error was an overzealous misuse of law to punish Trump. The most egregious of the cases pursued was Alvin Bragg's one in New York, one that even he was once skeptical of, but was reportedly pressured by some on the left into pursuing. Some cases, like the Georgia one, were legitimate. But the host of them, piled on in rapid succession, gave the impression that the legal system was being weaponized to get Trump. It confirmed to his base what it had always believed, that overeducated urban liberals were hypocrites, happy to bend rules and norms when it suited their purposes.
Your thought?
Well, yes, and you would then say, okay, what were their purposes? It's power. It's just about power. That's why they did this. They did this to keep him off the ballot, to tarnish him, to dirty him. Look how often they cited he's a convicted felon, right? He's a convicted felon because of the trumped-up case that Alvin Bragg brought in Manhattan, the one that Fareed is talking about. That's why he's a convicted felon. And he's accused of rape. I mean, that whole civil case was clearly trumped up. New York changed a law about retroactive cases just so that case could be brought. I mean, the finagling that went on, the underhanded methods used to indict and convict Donald Trump to keep him off the ballot. Remember, at least 12 states wanted to keep him off the ballot until the Supreme Court intervened. I mean, this is what Democrats did. And now it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And you just think, Brian, what a great middle finger that is from the American public to the Democratic Party and to those methods. I think it is one of the most breathtaking things I have ever seen in my life. And you go back, I mean, you really do have to go back to Ronald Reagan to capture the shock to the system that this election has delivered. The first one, 2016, was a very big deal. This is a much bigger deal, in part because of the way Trump broadened the Republican Party and the Republican voters. I mean, we were talking before about people from, I think, some enormous number of counties switched from blue to red, but yet not a single county in the United States flipped from red to blue.
It's amazing. CNN, I remember Jake Tapper said, calling all the counties had flipped, and he got nothing. And he couldn't believe it. And that's what I think. And the last question, Michael, what do media organizations take from this? When they said that Donald Trump was unacceptable and unelectable, now what?
Well, I think they're going to do what the New York Times will do, which is they will try to prove that it was a mistake. They will go after him hammer and tong, just like they did before. I see no let up in these institutions. The New York Times just reported a new record of subscribers, 11 million now. And so they're making money off of the hate Trump. And I'm sure some of the other networks are too. And how does MSNBC ever stay afloat except preaching pouring acid on Donald Trump day after day after day, guest after. I mean, I don't know how you keep it up, because there's no there, and you must get at least tired of it yourself. But it's the business model now for much of this media. So I don't think we're going to see much of a change, but the difference will be that the public knows it was false. I mean, a majority of the public, a clear majority of the public. That's what I think will be right. The big difference.
Gotcha. It's going to be exciting, Michael, and you'll have great access. He has great respect for you, the former and future president of the United States, and I look forward to your columns or insight, because I think he benefits from talking to you. That's my personal view.
Well,
I think he feels the
you,
same
Brian.
Way.
I certainly benefit from talking to him, so I hope I'm bringing something to the party myself.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. All right, when we come back, I'll take some calls. That was Michael Goodwin. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. Went a little long on that one. Senator Joni Ernst is going to be coming up shortly. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. 1-866-408-7669. Calls in 15. Don't move. We still have 40 seconds. That's good. Quick note. I'm going to be February 15th. I want you to join me at the Jacksonville Theater, the Florida Theater in Jacksonville, Florida. Go to BrianKilmeade.com and just order tickets. It's History, Liberty, and Laughs. We have put together a show like you wouldn't believe. If you love the country, you want to be inspired, you want to be motivated, that's the show to go to. Hope to see everybody in person, especially WOKV listeners. That's right in your area. Everybody else, you just got to drive a little bit. Don't move.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I am in my own race as well for conference chair, so of course I'm not going to show my cards today, but certainly we have an abundance of riches within the Republican Party and our conference in the United States Senate. There is a lot of talent, a lot of skills, a lot of ability. What we need is someone who will be able to lead, can present a vision, and, of course, work and support the Donald J. Trump administration. We need a strong leader, and certainly one of these individuals will rise to that occasion.
And that is Senator Joni Ernst, who wants to be the number three in the conference for the party, as the Senate will take over the majority. It looks like 53 votes. I have no idea what the holdup with McCormick is. He's got the AP. He's got us. He's got many others. But Casey, well, I guess, wants a recount, a way for the 100,000 of the votes to come in. He's got to, I think, get all 100,000. They're not letting him go to orientation. So I thought, what's the big deal? Then Senator Sinema tweeted out that it's a big deal, that what she learned a ton from orientation, that it's something senators really have to get to so they can hit the ground running. As far as President Trump goes, yeah, a mandate in every way. He's got 74,650,000. That's an all-time record for Republicans. Beats his 2020 mark, which is the longest for a sitting president. He's got 312 electoral votes. He got Arizona and brought and flipped. Flipped Nevada, which many people thought was impossible. Senator Joni Ernst joins us now, Armed Services Committee, ranking member of the Small Business Committee, and chairman of the Republican Policy Committee. And, Senator, you want to be the number three, right?
I sure do, Brian. I am running to be conference chair of our fabulous and ever-growing Republican conference in the United States Senate. Really excited to have that opportunity.
So you're going to be going against Tom Cotton.
I am a friend.
Yeah, so that makes it tough. Do you get to present your case?
Yes, we sure do. And I have been visiting with our members in the Republican Conference and those that are newly elected coming into the conference. So I get to debate and hear their ideas and listen to where they want to see the conference go. And it's been a lot of fun. I enjoy the campaigning, the visiting with members. I sat down with many of them before we left on the fall break, sat down with them in their offices. I currently serve as the number four in Republican leadership and am very driven by customer service. That's what we provide, is support to our members to make sure that every one of their voices is heard and every one of our members is successful.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how this goes. When it comes to the number one spot, have you made your decision?
I am still debating that, Brian. And it's just as I said earlier, man, we have three incredible gentlemen that are running for this top position. Each one of them will bring something unique to the table. So we're going to have to sort through that. So on Wednesday, before we actually vote in our conference, each one of them will have the opportunity to present their case to our conference. And even on Tuesday evening, we do have a candidate forum that is being sponsored by Senator Mike Lee and our steering committee members. So I'll be attending that. We'll be able to ask those running for leadership questions, and I hope to be able to participate as someone running for that number three slot as well.
So when you look at the first priority, do you believe it's the border? Do you believe it's going to be mass deportations? Where do you think is going to be happening first?
Well, I don't think there's going to be a hard and fast first. What I can say is there is going to be a hard and fast reset of America. So I've had various conversations with the transition team on how we can be supportive from the United States Senate. So simultaneously, what you see happening in this upcoming administration, the border will be secured. I know on day one, Donald Trump is going to come into office and he is going to throw down some executive orders that will protect Americans. So he will secure the border. He has, of course, nominated Tom Holman, who I think is a fabulous nominee to be the border czar, and he will be providing those solutions on day one. I think as well, we will start looking at the finances of the nation and how to work with Congress to make sure that the budget that the president is putting forward and the one that we can get through in Congress is going to meet the needs of our people while also scaling back on our federal government and making it more efficient. That is the Department of Government Efficiency that Howard Lutnick and Elon Musk are working on. We will look at strengthening our military. No more woke military. We are going to make sure that the men and women serving in uniform are trained and outfitted with the latest and greatest, and that our enemies around the world fear us. So, Brian, it's not going to be this one thing will happen first. It's going to be go time. On January 20th, we are going to see just this great evolution that will happen all at once. And I know that the transition team, I know that J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are working very, very hard on those policies today,
On Meet the Press, Garrett Hawk, I think you say his name, is a Republican. Excuse me. He's the reporter from NBC. And this is what he said, mm-hmm. And tell me if you get the read, because you've been through a few election cycles. Cut 35.
This team really feels vindicated. They had a theory of the case. It proved out. They won big. They won bigger than I think even some of them anticipated that they would. And they see their mandate as really broad. I mean, Trump's already having conversations with world leaders. He's starting to sort of flesh out his foreign policy. Domestically, they're starting to put in place, as you heard from John Barrasso, plans to make his economic agenda the Senate and the House's economic agenda. This is not Paul Ryan's Congress that he's coming into. He's coming into essentially a MAGA Congress here. And I think stylistically, we're about to see that the kind of norms that Trump always sort of leaned against, bursted through in some cases in his first administration, he will not be restrained by either. And this is going to be Trump's Washington when he comes back to it.
You agree?
Well, I agree. There is a mandate, and it was widespread, I think, exactly more so than most Americans thought was possible. But this is a man, you look at Donald J. Trump, who has already served in one highly successful administration. The man knows exactly what he needs to do to get things done. And so he is going to press forward very hard and make sure that the policies are being implemented as quickly as possible. A lot of folks like to talk about the first 100 days. Forget that. Throw it out the window. I anticipate he would want to see much of this being enacted or acted on within the least, at least the first couple of weeks. Never mind that 100 days. He has 4 years to accomplish the mandate that was set out by the American people, and he is going to do it, Brian.
Yeah, I guess he's going to have that opportunity. The one thing that we look at right now, he's got two huge hotspots, maybe three, but certainly in Europe and certainly in the Middle East. That's much different. We also have a unification of our enemies, North Korea, Iran, Russia, and China. So that's going to be new. The president, for the future president and past president, has talked to Netanyahu three times and Vladimir Putin on Thursday. Do you think that's a good thing, talking ahead of time? I like it. I don't see any objection from the current administration, but I am not used to that. It's usually one president at a time.
Right, exactly. And I think this is a good thing. And world leaders know what to expect from Donald Trump. They know that he is a wheeler and dealer. He is a hard negotiator, and he will always put our country first. He's not going to abandon our friends and allies like what we saw with President Biden and the fall of Afghanistan. He is going to make sure he is working with other leaders around the world. He will leverage those other leaders to make sure that we are protecting the United States of America and serving our own best interests. So I am excited that he's actually having those conversations. A lot of people may not like it, but every administration moves at their own speed. Mm-hmm. The Biden administration has stalled and been so slow on working on these foreign policy issues. I am thrilled that President Trump is taking the initiative and getting those conversations in place now. It just speaks to where our country will be already on January 25th in repairing some of those alliances with the leaders we have let down during the Biden administration, and also pushing back on our adversaries. A warning shot has already been fired, you know, hypothetically or figuratively, at Iran. You know, President Trump is throwing down the gauntlet and saying, we're going back to my policies of maximum pressure and maximum sanctions against Iran.
What do we need what does the military need? Because we're not even spending enough to keep up with inflation. And I remember Barack Obama's military, you had to just actually carve up different planes in order to get parts. So what do you think is going to be done at the Pentagon?
Well, we need to make sure we're focusing on government efficiency. Bottom line, the Pentagon is one of the worst institutions when it comes to efficiency. So much of the spending that is dumped into DOD is not going to plans and programs that have meaning in tomorrow's Army or Navy or Space Force. We need to make sure that we're moving away from those legacy programs and focusing on the technology that will protect us in the future. We have to do a better job at training and arming our forces and to have that technological cutting edge that will make a difference in tomorrow's fight. We can't keep focusing on the wars of the past. Now, Brian, you know, I'm a simple soldier, and we need to know and understand and train our men and women on the basics. For heaven's sakes, you better know how to use a map and a compass if you're going to be navigating around Iraq, you know, but we have technology and we need to exploit and use that technology. So I think there's a lot more that we can do at a lot less cost. And that's one thing that I know this incoming administration so badly wants to do. We want to do the best for our fighting men and women, but we haven't seen that in this administration.
So right now, Democrats are pointing fingers at each other. They all have a different theory on why they got trounced, about to lose the House, lost the Senate, and lost the White House, and lost every battleground state. Here's Fareed Zakaria, Cut 6.
The first big error was the Biden administration's blindness to the collapse of the immigration system and the chaos at the border. Instead of shutting it down, liberals branded anyone protesting as heartless and racist. They missed a massive shift in American public opinion in just a few years.
No one could argue, I wish he was saying that 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. But let me boil it down. Let's just boil this election down to two simple words. Bad policy.
Yep.
Period. Period. It doesn't matter if it's the economy, if it's our military, if it's the southern border and immigration. I don't care what we're talking about. Across the spectrum, the reason Kamala Harris lost, the reason they lost the Senate, rightfully so, is because of bad policy. They have leaned in so heavily to the far, far left and embraced all of these crazy ideologies that most Americans' heads are spinning. Like, what the heck happened to our America? This is not who we are as a country. Let's get out the common sense, folks. That's why they lost, was bad policy.
All right. Thanks so much, Senator. Best of luck in your quest to get that number three spot in the Senate. It's going to be a secret ballot. It'll be on Wednesday, right?
Yes, Wednesday. But regardless of what happens, Brian, we have got a great and strong conference that's ready to move forward with President Trump's agenda.
All right. Go get him, Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa.
You betcha.
You got it. When we come back, I see your calls up there. I'll get to it from Bethel, Connecticut to Omaha, Nebraska. And then we'll find out what's on your mind. You can also write me at briankilmeade.com. Don't move.
Freedom speaks for itself, and we wouldn't have it without you.
Thank you for serving our country and being the best Americans you can be.
Happy Veterans Day from the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
On Tuesday, Americans went to the polls and elected Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States.
To many people, including many people watching this show right now, the results were shocking and even horrifying.
Donald Trump, who tried to forcibly overturn the results of the last election, was returned to office by an overwhelming majority.
This is the same Donald Trump who openly called for vengeance against his political enemies.
Now, thanks to the Supreme Court, there are no guardrails.
Nothing to protect the people who are brave enough to speak out against him.
And that is why we at SNL would like to say to Donald Trump, we have been with you all along.
And just went on like that. It was pretty funny. I would take that over anything else I was expecting. Remember, they sang, when Hillary lost, Kate McKinnon sang Hallelujah, and that she was crying at a comedy show. Jimmy Kimmel was crying. Howard, you're listening in Omaha, Nebraska on COIL. Hey, Howard, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, like you, I was very disappointed this weekend when Trump publicly disinvited Mike Pompeo from joining the administration. America first means, like JFK said, bring in the best and the brightest, and Mike Pompeo with his impeccable credentials is at the top of that list.
Disappointed. Think he could have done anything. And the thing is, he didn't run. What about, Tim Scott ran, Vivek Ramaswamy ran, DeSantis ran, Nikki Haley ran, Governor Berger ran. Mike Pompeo was the one who didn't get in. Remember, he stayed on the sideline because I don't think anyone can win. If Trump's in, I don't think anyone can win. So he stayed. Yeah, he had an exploratory committee, but that was it. They don't want him because I hear that Don Trump Jr. think he's too hawkish. You believe that?
That's nonsense. He's a strong Christian principle guided man. Trump should reverse this decision.
I hope so. You know, if not right away, he could fit so many different positions. Did CIA, did state. He could do defense in a second. There's some other things he could do there, too. Director of National of Homeland Security. Mary, you're listening online in Alabama. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
Wanted to see, when do you think we'll have the House results in, and if you see any of the Dems like dragging the results out?
Good question.
I guess the first one. When do you think we'll have the House in so we can know?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is going to be fascinating. I think they're going to try to drag these confirmations out. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. What I was hoping Trump would do was call up Schumer, and I would call up Hochul on Elise Stefanik, because Elise Stefanik is that spot's going to be open. Hochul wants the Second Avenue subway built, way over schedule, over budget. She needs help from the federal government. She needs help for the tunnels. She needs help for the illegal immigrants. Say, listen, you rush Stefanik through, we get it done. He talks to Schumer. What do you need? I need my people confirmed. The person you don't like, let me know ahead of time. Fight that out. But the other ones that are my picks, not your picks, let them get through. Because the whole country can't go a year and a half without key ambassadors, cabinet secretaries, and the advisors are named on his own. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody, in this Veterans Day. I appreciate you all weekend long. I hope you had a fantastic weekend, a time to decompress and lick your wounds if you were going for Biden, and not celebrate if you're going for Trump. Most people I know and most of the country going for Trump. I'm sure some people are disappointed, but I think they shouldn't be surprised if they are. Talmadge Boston at the bottom of the hour, he looks at the Bob Woodward book and said, you know, there's other losers in this, and Bob Woodward's another, as he covers up for Joe Biden. Writes at times that he looks so awful, he scares everybody that sees him at fundraisers, and told the same story the exact same way three times, but yet has no problem saying that Joe Biden should do great things over the next 6 months because he no longer has to worry about running for president. He lost all credibility. Julian Epstein standing by. We're also noticing that on Veterans Day, like today, there's a memorial service going on. It's pretty weird to see Joe Biden, a lame duck, with a lame duck vice president in Kamala Harris, as they are in a solemn ceremony, counting those who lost their lives in the line of duty. So that he's done and Donald Trump isn't. Tomorrow, Joe Biden will meet Donald Trump and they'll do the ceremonial walkthrough and talk about what the two agendas will be. For Joe Biden, he'll go to his library, better known as his garage, and visit his old papers. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I'm convinced that President Trump knows that World War III is in the future, as you just described it, and that we have got to take action to restore deterrence in dealing with our adversaries.
That is General Jack Keane, the world's response to the incoming Trump team and his agenda, as Trump is already moving on Israel, Ukraine policies, talking to the German chancellor today, on all his allies over in Europe. I'll explain.
Number two.
In the same plan he had during his first administration, you concentrate on the public safety threats and the national security threats first, because they're the worst of the worst. So it's going to be the worst first. That's how it has to be done.
That is Tom Homan staffing up. The nominations are rolling in, and Tom Homan will be the border czar. Yes, and he wants the job, unlike Kamala Harris. And all this stuff is coming out of Mar-a-Lago. A lot of drama builds around the big contenders to get that spot, and also who the Senate majority leader will be on the Republican side.
Number one.
The first big error was the Biden administration's blindness to the collapse of the immigration system and the chaos at the border. Instead of shutting it down, liberals branded anyone protesting as heartless and racist.
Yes, and they still are doing it. Fareed Zakaria, the aftermath of the Titanic historic American election. We look at the stats, the Republicans' agenda, and the massive Democratic finger-pointing and blame-gaming. And that is a great time to bring up some of the stats. So far, President Trump has amassed more votes than anybody else in Republican presidential history. He had the record, even though he lost the last election in 2020, and now he surpassed what he did in 2020, 74,650,000, about 5 million better than Kamala Harris. So you can't say he didn't win the battleground states. You can't say he didn't make gains on every ethnic group. And you can't say that he didn't win the popular vote, because he did. This is the highest vote total, the electoral vote total, in 36 years. Let's bring in Julian Epstein. He said this is going to happen. He serves as chief counsel of the House Judiciary Committee, longtime Democrat, and joins us now. Julian, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Julian, you're one of the few Democrats who aren't surprised that this took place. What do you think the reason is for the Republican rout?
Well, no, I'm not surprised. And you and I have been talking about this for, I think, over a year. And anybody had been listening to our conversations and paying attention, I think the way most working class Americans in particular, but most Americans were tuned into what we were talking about, weren't surprised either. I mean, I sort of agree. I think it was the this was our Marie Antoinette moment. You know, I did a piece for the Post yesterday, New York Post, saying this was our Marie Antoinette moment. The closest thing to a Marie Antoinette moment where working class voters were uniting across racial lines to reject not just the Democratic Party, but the entire professional elite. So it was the Democrats, it was billions of dollars, it was the mainstream news media, it was Hollywood, it was Wall Street and Silicon Valley, it was the universities, it was sort of every mainstream professional elite that had become the left. And I think the reasons for it were that people don't like what they saw in the economy. I don't think people believe in big government. Government is now 25% of the economy. I don't think they believed in identity politics and cultural leftism. Immigration, I agree with Fareed, immigration was the main issue, one of the main issues. But I don't think people like what they saw on gender politics, on race politics. I think the idea that the Democrats had, one of the best illustrations of how out of touch the Democrats were with the EV mandates, which were putting working class voters, workers out of work in the Midwest, and particularly in the auto industry, in big numbers. You look at the auto number, you look at the losses in the auto industry because of the EV mandates, and it's extraordinary. And I think they looked at a world stage and saw chaos where they saw relative stability under Trump. So I think it was all of those issues. I think it was, you know, big statism with the economy. I think it was cultural leftism and identity politics. And I think it was chaos on the world stage.
Right. And it's still happening. And it's very interesting to see Trump talk to Netanyahu three times and Vladimir Putin once already. He's talking to Scholz today over in Germany. And there's not much protest from this administration because they know it's got to be a seamless handoff and it's going to be a much different policy. But in terms of the party itself, I thought Joe Manchin nailed it with me on Saturday night on One Nation, Cut 9.
Basically, the Democratic Party, the party that I was born and raised in, being fiscally responsible and socially compassionate and always there to help the working person who had a job, wanted to keep that job, wanted to have a safe working condition, wanted to make it had good pay with benefits, they could take care of their family and have a quality life. They forgot them, and what the party over the years has just moved from there, spending more time and effort on helping those who are able-bodied but won't work or don't work.
And there's a huge portion of the population that's not working. And the whole student forgiveness on loan forgiveness.
100%.
It's crazy. I mean, I'm going to go forgive somebody's loan. The big issue was why is college so expensive and how much are we subsidizing it? And you could feel for people that are stuck in loans in the medical profession. I get it. But the way they did it was such a turn off to everybody else working for a living. Julian, did you see 60 Minutes last night?
I didn't see 60 Minutes. I got to tell you, I am so turned off from the mainstream news media. I never thought I would hear myself saying this.
Well, you would love
this. A couple
years
ago.
You would love this because the first block was them going to Pennsylvania to find out why he won Pennsylvania and the rest of the country. And they went to a diner and they said, well, inflation's down and all these things are down. And the owner of the diner says, I don't think so. He goes, it's too expensive. Everything's too expensive. And then they asked at the end, why did you vote for Trump? And he goes, well, we think he's looking out for us, working class people. He thinks he's one of us. And whatever you want to say, it doesn't matter if Julian Epstein says it, Brian Kilmeade says it. What we're just trying to tell people is that those crowds weren't paid. They showed up.
Yeah.
And it's not because he hosted The Apprentice. It's because what he did and what he wants to do. They don't get that.
I think they are remarkably out of touch. You know, I used to think that the news media was the Democrats' biggest friends, the mainstream news media. Now I think it's their biggest enemy because they've helped lure them in this to this self-delusion that things were really fine, that it's fine that teenagers were experimenting with genital mutilation with teenagers, that inflation was transitory. Sort of all of the things that, you know, we went through all of these issues on economic and cultural issues. We've had numerous conversations. And I've been saying you can look at the polling on all of them, and Democrats are in double-digit deficits, sometimes by 30 and 40 points. 80% of the public didn't like what the Biden administration was doing on immigration. And the media, I think, lulled them into this false sense of complacency that all of these things were really okay. And, you know, the arrogance and the conceit of the professional elite in thinking, oh, some of the numbers on the economy have gotten better now. Inflation isn't as bad as what it was. Well, what common sense voters know is common sense. And the common sense is that inflation's gone up 21% under Biden, an average of 5.5 a year. So when you talk about, oh, there's, you know, you talk about numbers that, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is putting out a month ago, people don't care about that kind of stuff. They know what their lived experience is, to use a phrase of the left. And, you know, I think this is the best thing that ever happened to the Democrats if they take the right lessons from it, which is that the Republicans have stolen their real estate. They've gone in and they have channeled the anxieties of working class voters on jobs, on trade, on automation, on crime, on opioids, on, you know, having an intelligent and balanced energy policy. They've challenged, they've stolen the real estate from right underneath the feet of the Democrats, particularly with working class voters that Democrats used to win. And if Democrats are smart, they will resist the resist politics. They will not get into it, because the other thing that people don't like about the Democrats, you know, when I would see Harris supporters, I would always ask the same question. You know, Thomas Sowell had this great line with people on the left that you can see the left's arguments often fall apart if you just ask them a couple of questions. And the question I would consistently ask Harris voters is, what do you like that she will do? What is the, what does she stand for that you really like? And invariably, nobody could answer, of the Harris supporters that I would question, nobody could answer the question as to what the Democrats are for. And that's the problem with resist politics, is that it continues on with this orange man bad, which hasn't worked. It's been used now for 9 years, since 2015. It was how we got lawfare. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. It's only helped Trump. And Democrats would be much better to look at what the Republicans did, which is to channel, understand the concerns and anxieties of working class voters, and try and work on building something rather than tearing down.
And here's the numbers. The Trump effect, pre-Trump, under 30s was the Dems up 23. Now they're up 11. Under $50,000 a year, Dems were plus 22. Now the Republicans are plus 3. No college degree. The Dems were up 4. And now the Republicans were up 14. So these the numbers don't lie. Go ahead.
Look at the you can look at those numbers even further. Look at the numbers that Democrats won, that Republicans won of young men, that Trump won of young men. Look at of men under 29. Look at the gender gap that never occurred. Look at how many black men have now, the number that I've seen. I think you're looking at the Wall Street Journal numbers right there. The numbers that I've seen from Catalyst is that black men voted for Trump by as much as 25%. We still don't have all the exits yet. The exits are still coming in.
Right.
Hispanic men voted for Trump by 54%. This is a massive realignment that we're seeing. Everyone is moving away from the Democratic Party other than professional elites, and particularly professional female elites, white female elites. Other than that, the Democrat coalition is imploding because they have not listened to the voters. And, you know, if they had listened to the Brian Kilmeade show, Rui Teixeira had this great line where he called the Fox News fallacy, which is that Democrats have this idea, if something's on Fox News, that it must be wrong and it must be conservative and it must be, you know, whatever. But if you had listened to Fox News, and this is not a suck up, but if you had listened to Fox News since 2021, you would have seen the disaster of Afghanistan coming. You would have seen the disaster of inflation, which wasn't transitory. You would have seen the disaster of immigration. You would have seen the disaster of the energy policy and the Green New Deal extremism, which lost working class voters. So if Democrats were smart, they would start watching Fox News and get a sense as to
flying the drones at the border, and the border was showing how it was collapsing. We told you the caravans ahead of time. We showed you them walk right through the border and go through the barbed wire fences, and that wasn't spin. Nobody else would come unless it got really, really bad. So in terms of the hope that they'll turn the page and just start working with Trump if they could until the election comes, here's Hochul Pritzker weighing in on what they plan on doing. Cut 33.
And I will work with him or anybody, regardless of party, on these kind of efforts that I know will benefit the state of New York. However, if you try to harm New Yorkers, or roll back their rights, I will fight you every step of the way.
To anyone who intends to come take away the freedom and opportunity and dignity of Illinoisans, I would remind you that a happy warrior is still a warrior. You come for my people, you come through me.
So right away, not so much an open stretched hand.
What a bunch of egotistical nonsense. Yeah. Like they are, you know, if you ask these governors what they think they're fighting against or what they're protecting, they wouldn't be able to identify it. Trump and the Republicans have made it clear they have no interest in federalizing abortion. So what is it that they're fighting? They can't really identify
sanctuary
it.
Cities.
And it shows. Well, yeah, good luck with that fight. Good luck with that. But it shows that the problem with the Democrats here, which is that they have become such a priggish, pontificating party of moral condescension that all they can do is disapprove and disdain of the other side. All they can do is try to tear down rather than to build, because it's a lot easier to tear down. It's a lot easier to have this sort of egotistical, I'm leading the morality police on, you know, orange man bad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tear down the Republicans. It's a lot easier. It takes a lot less imagination than to actually try to build something. You know, the Democrats had this opportunity. Here's a great example. The Democrats had this opportunity to build broadband out into rural areas, into areas that haven't had it. They passed the infrastructure bill in 2021, 3 years ago.
Where is it?
You know, they haven't broken ground on anything.
They made eight terminals for electric cars.
You know why?
Why?
You know why they haven't? Because the woke bureaucracy has insisted on all these conditions. On all these sort of, you know, race quotas and sort of labor standards and all of these different conditions, you know.
Gotcha.
And nothing's gotten out of the door.
Julie, great point. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm against the clock now. Just an example about Fox. We're carrying the live ceremony on Veterans Day for those who lost their lives in the line of duty. I could see the quad boxes. Nobody else covering it. Okay. CNN just popped it in. But
I was with my friends from the Navy SEALs on Saturday, and you should do something on Veterans Day. You should do something to celebrate and thank the veterans. We cannot thank them enough for what they do for us.
Julian Epstein, thanks so much. Hopefully the Democratic Party's listening to you, because we need people in the middle. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
For the American people who've been listening to these lies from the Democratic left, I will tell you this is not something that Donald Trump has ever spoken to or he's committed to whatsoever. There's no enemies list. I mean, yeah, there are people who've been opposed to him, but he is focused on the American people. Job number one is securing our border and beginning the process of deporting illegal immigrants out of our country. Job number two is getting our economy thriving again, becoming energy dominant again. That's his focus. His focus is the American people, not some enemies list that only gets talked about in the Daily Kos or Salon.com or any other place like that. He's focused on making our country great.
How about CNN? I mean, that's what I was watching this weekend. Is he going to go revenge? Does he have an enemies list? No, he doesn't. Does he have an enemy list? Is he going to go after people? Is he going to sue people? Is he going to put people in jail? No, he's not said that. Oh, yeah, he hasn't said that. Oh, what about Jack Smith? Will he go after him? Will he put him in jail? No, Jack Smith is already winding down his cases because he knows he has no case and has no future. The Georgia case could live, and the sentencing for New York for him is Tuesday. But he's going to tell us, he's coming up, but he's going to tell us Tuesday if the judge, Merchant, will go ahead with some type of sentence for the soon-to-be president. I highly doubt it. Talmadge Boston next.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
They are committed to being very aggressive, to look at what Trump might be doing. But I think the motto is no cheap shots, that we have to be really steadfast in the reporting. But get out some of the politicalization of the commentary and stick to the facts.
That is Bob Woodward. And Bob Woodward wrote a book called War. I'm sure it's selling. I haven't checked the list lately. But in it, he talks about Trump and he talks about Biden. He gives you an insider view of the administration. But what he does is he contradicts himself constantly by talking about the horror in which Joe Biden freezes up and scares people behind the scenes, says the same story verbatim two or three times in a row, looks almost like death, looks awful as he gets close to his administration. The other side of his mouth comes out and says in the next 6 months without running for president, President Biden get a lot done. At the same time, interviewing a bunch of people that despise and hate and label Donald Trump a fascist like General Mark Milley. Talmadge Boston, an esteemed historian, author of How the Best Did It, Leadership Lessons from Our Top Presidents, says that among the carnage in the aftermath of the 2024 election is Bob Woodward's credibility. Talmadge, thanks so much for joining us. In what respect do you think that Woodward's going to pay a steep price for this?
Well, his book is obviously still selling well. Of course, people bought it before they'd read it or read many reviews of it. I had a piece, op-ed piece yesterday in the Dallas Morning News that was featured that shows that the book is full of, it's just a political hack job in favor of Biden. It came out 3 weeks before the election and attempting to cause Trump's defeat. But anybody who reads it sees that it's a political hack job. How in the world could he conclude that while knowing that a year before the disastrous presidential debate, Biden was showing exactly the same signs of not being able to put sentences together, repeating himself, et cetera, needing note cards with answers on them to answer questions. That was a year before the debate. And yet none of that was brought out. And Woodward acts like, well, during that year, yeah, we know what we know about some of those fundraisers. But for the most part, he was successfully guiding a wonderful foreign policy. And he had a steady and purposeful presidency. Well, that's a picture of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That's an irreconcilable description of two very different people. And what it means is for at least the last year of Biden's presidency, the decisions were made by his anonymous insiders. All of Woodward's book, his sources are anonymous. So we don't know who's done what to guide this senile old man for the last 12 months before the disastrous debate. And he concludes by saying Biden has had a steady and resourceful presidency. Despite all this, amazingly, he also, when Biden finally stepped down, here's Woodward, supposedly the great investigative reporter of our lifetime, who says nothing about how Biden got pushed out by Pelosi and Obama and Schumer and Akeem Jeffries and all of them. No mention of that whatsoever. The greatest inter-party political coup of our lifetime, and he's silent on it.
Suddenly he's not even curious about it.
Yeah, it's just shocking. And the fact that the book came out 3 weeks before the election, we know that Woodward wanted Harris to win, wanted Trump to lose, and was hopeful that this book would send a clear message. I mean, on the cover is a picture of Kamala Harris, and yet inside the book, she's a non-player, as you know, was throughout her vice presidency. And so it was an effort to influence the election in a way favorable to Harris. Obviously, it did not succeed, even though its first week it was number one on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller. Since then, it's gone down to number four. So he is selling books. But I think once people get into it and realize how politically motivated it was, how distorted it is in the way it picked its facts and ignored crucial facts, people are going to learn this is not a book for historians to think about seriously.
Remember how many hours Trump gave him, like count, which was a bad move, because he thought he could win him over. So at the end of it, he just wrote a book about Trump that made him look absolutely terrible, unprepared for the job, and everything led to January 6th, and nobody's a fan of January 6th on either side, but it was totally overdone, and it was beat to death to the point where people stopped listening to it, any type of condemnation on January 6th. But he wanted to make sure that the guy that gave him all that access, all that time, and all that respect did not become president again. And the guy that's got to look really terrible today is General Milley, correct? He's the one who presided over Afghanistan, the terrible foreign policy, but it's Trump that's the fascist.
Well, Milley obviously has done his dead level best to paint Trump in the worst possible way. One of the most interesting things, though, about the book is how Biden refused to be interviewed for the book, even though Biden and all of his team knew that Woodward would presumably be favorable.
Yep.
But what would happen had he been interviewed by Woodward? Woodward would have seen what Robert Hur saw, that this is a senile old man with a bad memory who doesn't function very well. And so that's the last thing that his handlers wanted Woodward to see in person was the Biden that people had seen at the June 2023 fundraisers.
And that's a great point, because if you know, we had this in history before. Wasn't Woodrow Wilson, he had a stroke, and it which comes out later, basically his wife was running the country, never told anyone about it?
Yeah, for almost 2 years. I mean, it was totally hidden. And what we're seeing now is that so much of Biden's decline has been totally hidden, starting with his campaign from the basement. I mean, he's been a president who's been tied to a teleprompter. His speeches are obviously written by other people. I mean, one of the interesting things that Woodward says in his book was what a forceful speech Biden gave in his February 2024 State of the Union address, where he looked like a ramped up, you know, unusually over-caffeinated person doing his best to read a teleprompter. And Woodward describes that as a forceful speech. It was a joke. The guy was obviously up on something that we'd never seen before, trying to convince the American people at that time that, in fact, he had what it took to serve another 4 years. But when the debate came in on June the 27th, there was no way they could cover that up because there was no teleprompter there.
So here's a couple of things. Number one is the Democrats were going to cover up his condition after 2022. They were going to let him run for re-election, thought anyone can beat Trump, especially after they dirtied him up with all these trials. So the opposite happened. He gets a nomination and emerges stronger. But they were willing to do that. And people say, well, it's ageism. What's the big deal, 82? Well, Bernie Sanders is 82. I think he's older than Biden. And I think Bernie Sanders is as a socialist, but he's the same way he was at 62 and 52. That he hasn't changed the idiot. It's nothing to do with age. It's the deterioration. So this thing happens in June. They have the debate, and Nancy Pelosi's got to get him out. So here's the story that has yet to be written in detail. Pelosi tells him he's got to, let me see your polls. Show me the polls that show you're up. He goes, well, the internal polls show him up. Later we find out that there was no internal polls showing he was up. So what she wanted to do is oust him and then open it up. But what he did is double cross her, and maybe Jill was behind it, and said, okay, I'm out, but my selection is Vice President Harris. And Nancy Pelosi was double crossed there, because now you got Harris with 32% approval rating, who America was not buying. Listen to her describe the situation. Cut 24.
You had reportedly said you wanted a sort of an open primary if Joe Biden stepped down. Did you change your mind because you saw all the excitement around Kamala Harris?
No, I didn't change my mind. We had an open primary and she won it. Nobody else got in the race.
No, she was named it. She went on to say he was named. Yeah, he named her and no one else could get in around her. So that's what she wasn't figuring.
Well, that's just sheer nonsense. To call what happened after he stepped down as an open primary is just beyond absurd. I think we need a good investigative reporter to find out exactly what conversations took place that led to Biden's dropping out of the race. And, of course, in his original letter, he didn't endorse Kamala Harris, but about 45 minutes later, he did. Perhaps that was an oversight, whatever it was. But certainly his backing her made her road easier. And of course, they were in a condensed time frame. They had to get something done.
Right.
And she had not obviously participated in any of the primaries. So there was a sense of desperation. We've got to come up with a candidate. They thought, well, who's most likely to be able to beat Trump on this short time frame? The gender of the woman obviously was important. Her heritage, African-American, Jamaican, Indian combination, was obviously going to be useful. But what they forgot was that this was a person who had no prior track record of being able to make a case for whatever point of view was to the American people.
So, Talmadge, give me an idea, the perspective of how big a win this is. They say it's the biggest for a Republican in 36 years, 312 electoral votes, 53 senators are going in there. It doesn't look like Kerry Lake will be 54. And then you have a House that's supposed to go the Republicans' way, but not a big margin. And then you have the popular vote going to the Republican, too, and every battleground state going to Trump. Can you put in perspective this win?
Well, this is as big a mandate as anybody could imagine on all fronts. And to have both houses in Congress in support of the president means that big things are going to happen very quickly. It doesn't happen very often. Lyndon Johnson in 1964 had it and pushed through some very good legislation in terms of civil rights, but some very bad legislation in terms of the Great Society. So things are going to be happening fast on a daily basis. The fact that President Trump has served 4 years before, there's going to be no learning curve. He knows exactly what to do on day one. He's already got drafts prepared of his executive orders, which will be fine-tuned. So this thing is going to get off to a fast start, and it's only if people like Susan Collins or Laura Murkowski or whoever decide to go against party lines, which perhaps they'll do on some bills, but probably not most of them. This is going to be a huge game-changing result for America because it's a whole new set of people in control of the situation.
I know you're over in Texas, and people kept telling us for the last three cycles, Texas is gradually turning blue. Well, not this time and not this year. In fact, more border cities and communities and counties turn red. Where is Texas now? It's such a fast-growing state. Do you have a sense of where they stand?
Texas is a red state, and it's going to stay that way. Look at what Ted Cruz did to Colin Allred, beat him by almost 10 points when all the polls and the media were saying it was going to be within 1 point. But where Texas is, we obviously have an increasing percentage of Latinos. But these Latinos, the legal Latinos, are working hard. They have the same values as everybody else. They want to keep as much of their paycheck as they can. They want lower taxes. They want efficient government. They don't want regulation. And so the assumption was always that as Texas became more diverse, that would favor the Democratic Party. And that is not the case. Because people who are working hard to get ahead in life and pursue the American dream believe much more strongly in what their Republican outlook is than what today's Democratic Party outlook is.
Talmadge Boston, historian and author of How the Best Did, in many books, but Leadership Lessons from Our Top Presidents. We'll see if Trump qualifies for your future books when it comes to leadership. He's certainly got an opportunity. Talmadge, thanks so much.
Brian, always love being on your show.
All right, great. And also he talks about comparing to Bob Woodward, who was supposed to be this great investigative journalist and missed the two biggest stories right in front of his face, and that was Joe Biden's failing cognitive ability to do the job and how Kamala Harris got the job. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This Veterans Day, say thanks to those who serve and have served.
We're very thankful.
Thank you for protecting our country.
Happy Veterans Day from the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Joe Biden's been a phenomenal president. He's lived up to so many of the promises he's made. There's one promise left that he can fulfill. Being a transitional figure. He could resign the presidency in the next 30 days, make Kamala Harris president of the United States.
Whoa.
He would absolve
her
from being able to, from having to oversee the January 6th transition, right, of her own defeat. And it would make sure that it would dominate the news at a point where Democrats have to learn drama and transparency and doing things that the public want to see is the time. This is the moment for us to change the entire perspective of how Democrats.
Okay, this is now.
Well, that'll never happen. But that was a idea for the brainchild of a former staffer there saying, let's make Kamala Harris president for the last 30 days. Meanwhile, Joe Biden speaking, and it is Veterans Day. And here on Fox, we are partnering with the U.S. vets to make CAMO our cause to help prevent and put an end to veteran homelessness in the U.S. Veterans and homelessness should never be in the same sentence. Join us on Veterans Day. Shop for CAMO at gov.fox/USVets and simply wear CAMO, snap a selfie or video, and share your CAMO on social media and put hashtag HonorUSVets. Show your appreciation and gratitude on Veterans Day. All right, fantastic. Now let's find out if there's more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
And I almost forgot to do more to know, so I'm very thankful for Prevagen as a show. Toy manufacturer Mattel has apologized after mistakenly printing the web address of a pornographic site on the packaging of its newly launched Wicked Dolls instead of pointing readers to the official website, adaptation of the Tony Award-winning musical information found boxes of the special edition dolls led to a page that requires users to be 18 or over. Quote, Mattel was made aware of this misprint. They're making an effort to change it. Okay, no one reads the box anyway. You'll be fine. Next, charities are handing out free crack pipes on L.A. Skid Row, and addicts just sell them to buy more drugs. Isn't that a great idea for in Los Angeles? Are you a junkie in Skid Row? You can make a million. Just look for the door that says Homeless Healthcare Los Angeles, where addicts line up for free needles, glass pipes, smoking foils, and other accessories to help them get high. How about directions how to do smash and grabs or how to burglarize a home when they're there or not there? Homeless Healthcare LA is one of the several organizations in California that give smoking accessories to anyone. Addicts told the Post that the free crack pipes help them afford more drugs to feed their habit. So sell the pipes and in order to get more drugs. I think that's exactly how you get people off drugs and stop the drug abuse in our country. Hey, this cruise invites guests to escape politics on a 4-year voyage around the world. Villa V Residences announced on Thursday the Villa V Odyssey ship now lets passengers sail around for as long as 4 years. Any U.S. passenger who are upset about Donald Trump beating Harris in the election can embark on the journey and visits 140 countries and returns your home with a new president in 2028. The cruise comes with an all-exclusive food and drinks. It costs room start at $255,000, while the double occupancy room is $319,000. Well, let me see. If you rent your room and then you rent your house, let's say, maybe you can just sail around. To me, I would get a little boring. A Villa Via resident spokesman told Business Insider the trip gives passengers flexibility to escape traffic jams, politics, and the monotony of life. And a woman who's addicted to pulling out and eating their own hair had a giant hair bowl measuring 15 centimeters removed from her stomach. The 38-year-old, who was suffering from nausea, vomited an extremely swollen abdomen when she arrived at the hospital. They don't give her name, but I know that's somebody I don't want to hang out with. And I believe you now know more. For those people who watched the Giants and Jets over the weekend, I apologize for New York sports in general. Make sure you go to BrianKilmeade.com, Florida Theater, February 15th, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Get your tickets now. I can't hear your complaints. And don't forget the Patriot Awards are also coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll be at that. That'll be on Long Island at Long Island University at Tillis Center. Thanks for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget Fox and Friends tomorrow, 6 to 9.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.